nothing much more fun than watching those kids up here. Especially when you see a little one holding a cup and saying, coffee. I'm guessing that wasn't coffee that she had, though. At least I hope not. All right, well, just a couple quick announcements before I get started. First of all, just a reminder to check your bulletins. This is the season when lots of things happen. Lots on the calendar, lots on the schedules. I know your personal schedules as well as our church calendar here, so I would encourage you to check that out. One of those things being that the men's breakfast, which is normally the first Saturday of each month, is going to be pushed back a week to the second Saturday of the month because of the bazaar that's happening here. There's going to be the bazaar that supports our women's ministry. Guys, since there's no men's breakfast, what an awesome opportunity to help out. And Jessica has let me know that there is still a need for people to help out, both with setup and teardown. So set up on Friday and tear down on Saturday afternoon and anything, probably some things in between. So if you've got time and you've got arms and legs and are ready to help out, talk to Jessica back there. Jessica, can you just kind of give a wave and let her know that you're available and she can get you signed up to help her out with that. It's a really, really fun time. The second thing I wanted to do, and though Becca's already out of here, as most of you know, Rebecca Hart led our Operation Christmas Child event, as well as setting us up as a drop-off location for the greater Clark County area, which last year and the years before, there's only been one in the greater Clark, Cowlitz, even Skamania County. This year there's three, including us. Everybody who came here, I think, said something to the effect of, we're so glad we don't have to drive to Philida. But I wanted, a lot of you put in hours to help her with that, as well as it's worth noting that Hawkinson Community Church contributed about 70 boxes just on our own, but more than 900 boxes went through this church on their way to be an opportunity to share the gospel, absolutely, with not just with the kids who receive these boxes, but with their siblings and their families and parents, and there's story after story of these kids who've received these boxes and not only have come to know Jesus, but have even in turn gone on to step into ministry and to lead others into faith. So what a cool thing that we had the chance to be a part of. It's very exciting. Speaking of Christmas, if you've turned on your radio or walked into a store or have ridden in my car, that for the past like 2 or 3 weeks, not just since Thursday, but you've noticed that there's a new sound that is a recurring annual sound that has begun to come out of your radios, Christmas music. And you either love it or you hate it. You're either one of those, it can't start until after Thanksgiving, or you're like me and you've been playing it since, early November or late October. I love it, some hate it. Either way, it's a reality that cannot be denied. Multiple radio stations switch over to a full 24/7 nothing but Christmas music between now and the end of the season. And it's interesting listening to all these different, we had on our Thanksgiving trip, we had, because it was 5 hours each direction, there were several times where we just flipped it onto a Christmas Spotify playlist and just kind of let it go random. And I've noticed in all of this that there's different types of Christmas music. There's some Christmas music that accurately reflects the season. For instance, Luke picked out a Christmas carol for us to sing this morning, and it actually had to do with Jesus, which is good. And I'm thankful that that's the way we went with that. And none of these random type ones. Yeah, some of them really reflect the meaning of the season. Some of the Christmas songs, though, reflect the winter weather. For example, Let It Snow. Walking in a Winter Wonderland, Baby It's Cold Outside. That's about as straight to weather as you can get right there. It's just a forecast. A meteorologist says, Baby, it's cold outside. I think that's what the song's about, if I remember right. Yeah. Then there's other songs that are just fun, right? That are just fun, and I don't even know exactly how they relate to Christmas in general, like Jingle Bells or Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree. I suppose that there's a Christmas tree in the song, but it's really just about dancing. Those songs are great too. But then there are some songs this is where we're going today, that are about that fictional beard. Oh, sorry, I hope that didn't spoil anything for anyone. That bearded character who lives up in the North Pole, who brings us the presents, and which, of course, you know, we like to talk about the fact that, you know, Jesus is the reason for the season, but gift giving is a significant part of it, isn't it? In fact, we would talk about that. That's because we've received the gift of Jesus, then we give these gifts to others. But, I mean, let's be real. As kids, it'd be nice to say that all we thought about was Jesus and the meaning of his birth, but we'd be lying. You know, we were thinking about what was in that box. In fact, I know some people who as children were very good at opening up their packages without leaving a mark, and because my wife buries her head. You know, assuming going, okay, what am I going to get? What am I going to get here? And in fact, you know, some of those songs talk specifically about, boy, there's that one specific thing that you want of any else. For instance, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front. Now, there is a kid who's satisfied with what he's got. He's not looking for toys. He's not looking for gift cards to Best Buy. He just wants his two front teeth so he can say Merry Christmas and enunciate it right. You know, what a sweet kid. What a sweet, sweet kid. You know, then there's the little girl who says that she wanted a hippopotamus. Now, she's on the other end of the spectrum here. She's not only asking for one specific thing, she wants something that is a little bit ridiculous. You know, and mom is concerned that the hippopotamus will eat her, but she's quick to remind her that the teacher said the hippos are vegetarians. Despite the fact, true fact, hippos kill more people in Africa each year than lions do. So, if you're in Africa and you're thinking about petting an animal, go for the lion. Okay, maybe my advice stops somewhere short of there. Yeah, I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. How disappointed is she going to be on Christmas morning? What kind of package would you have for, I don't know. You know, and then there's the famous, you know, all I want for Christmas is you. If I just had the right boyfriend or girlfriend, then Christmas would be meaningful. But it's not just songs. There's also movies. For instance, my favorite Christmas movie of all time. You know exactly what he wants, right? A Red Ryder BB gun with a compass in the stock and that thing that tells time. Yeah, he wants that Red Ryder BB gun more than anything else, and then the entire movie is built around his just passion for this thing, and of course, what does everybody tell him will happen if he gets it? He'll shoot his eye out. Poor kid. Imagine being told that over and over again, and just time after time. You know, this is, like I said, by far my favorite Christmas movie. I'll usually turn it on, you know, turn on TBS on, what is it, Christmas Eve through Christmas Day, and it's like 24 hours. Of just this movie on repeat. And what's cool is on TNT, they do the same thing, but offset by about half the movie. So if you come in and you're in the wrong spot, you just flip it between channels and you can get to the... I don't know that in the last 10 years I've ever watched the movie from the beginning to the end. I've watched it from like somewhere in the middle back to somewhere in the middle, but that's okay. But why? You know, when you can, it's not like I need it. Well, and usually we're doing other things, and so we'll just leave it playing, you know, all day until someone else goes, can we please turn something else on? But that kid with the in the clothes, you know, that part makes me laugh every time. Well, I had my own Red Ryder BB gun moment. It wasn't a BB gun I wanted. It was this. And it was this specifically. I had to look for it. It was not, you know, those little slot. You know, you put the car on the thing, it's got the little pin in the bottom, and you pull the trigger, and when it goes fast, it flips off the track because, you know, you have to learn how to slow it down around the corners and everything. Well, not only was this one of those, but as you see from the picture, they were transformers, which means when you got it going fast enough, it would flip up, and now it was a robot, which also meant that it had a higher center of gravity, which means when you were around the corners, it flipped off that much faster. Not only that, but as you can see from the neon on there, it glowed in the dark. Of course, nothing like that. That's just good marketing on the box. But you think it does as a kid, and when I saw that package in the store for the first time, I wanted nothing else. Like, I wanted this Transformer race set. And my parents told me it was too expensive. They were like, nope, sorry, that's just not going to happen. And I was, it was all I really wanted. It was everything I really wanted. Well, time went by, and I don't know what possessed me to do it, but I thought, you know, I'm going to just look in Mom and Dad's closet, just see if they're keeping anything in there. And you know what I found in Mom and Dad's closet? So here's the problem with me, as many of you have noticed, I have a really hard time keeping my mouth shut. And so naturally, I said something about it, like, I know you guys got me this. So in the morning, and I honestly, I can't remember if it was a birthday or Christmas, I just remembered the trauma that surrounded the package. Because what I got was not a package shaped like that at all. It was shoebox shaped. It was heavy, but I didn't know what was in it. So I unwrap it, I pull the lid off and toss it to the side, and inside is a brick. Me too, most of the time. Not during this time, not during this moment. And I'm holding the brick and I'm looking at them and they're going, like, how did that go, snooping in the closet? How did that go, Trent? It's like, but you guys bought it for me. They're like, things bought can go back. I'm like, but you didn't get me anything? I mean, this was a brick from the backyard. I'm like, you didn't even buy this brick. Is there a receipt for the brick so I can take it back? And there was no receipt. And so they just waited. They didn't say a word. And so I'm looking. I'm like, well, maybe if I open, like, so I start taking the box apart to try to see if there's some secret compartment in the shoebox, and nothing and nothing. And they start laughing and they can't stop. And finally, my dad kind of kicks the lid back over towards me, and written underneath the lid was, and this will teach you not to go snooping in our closet. If you go there now, you will find something you will like. They just left it in the closet. They wrapped it that way. See, I had this gift I wanted more than anything else, but I wanted it on my terms. I wanted it my way, and I was going to get it when I wanted. And I didn't know how to keep my mouth shut. Still need to work on that one. You know, our desires, especially our deepest longings, are powerful forces. The English reformer Thomas Cranmer coined this familiar phrase. Says, what the heart loves, the will chooses, and the mind justifies. The mind doesn't direct the will. The mind is actually captive to what the will wants, and the will in turn is captive to what the heart wants. The trouble with human nature is that we are born with a heart that loves ourselves over and above everything else in this world, including God. We have our lives are not built upon our decisions. We like to think in our post-enlightenment culture that we make rational decisions, right? We think through what's best and we do what's right. And what Cranmer points out and is consistent with Scripture's account of human beings is that our hearts really lie at the beginning of what we choose to do. And our brains are just very, very good at setting a will and then justifying what it is that we've already decided in our hearts that we want. And it takes something powerful to overcome that. In fact, he goes on to say that really the only solution to wrong actions, which come from a wrong desire, is to have some better affection, to love and desire something else more, is the only way we really overcome what it is that has us pulled down. So the question for us comes to this. It's what is your greatest affections? What are your greatest affections? What are the things you desire more than anything else? If you could ask Santa for one thing, what might it be? What desires and loves are controlling your life and leading your will and ultimately your actions in all of this? In Psalm 27, King David wrote out what might be the best wish list. In the midst of a moment of crisis, between a phrase of just extolling how much he trusted God and then crying for his help, he says this. He says, one thing of the Lord, that I will seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire of his temple, or to inquire in his temple. This is David's wish list. This is his, if I could have one thing, if I could have one thing, what would it be? And David says, if I could ask one thing, if there was one thing that I will seek after, it's that I might dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. Ultimately, what David is asking for here is God's presence. He says, that is the thing I desire more than anything else. And so, really, the question for us isn't so much what your desires are now, though I think that's important that we identify those. What are the things that right now I'm desiring at this high, at a high level? But what would your life look like if your greatest desire really was to be in the presence of God, to have Him, to have the presence of God be the thing that you desired above all else? What might change? What might look different in there? What is that? And then what does that gift look like? And that's what we're going to look at this morning, and really through this Advent season, is we're going to look at this greatest gift, this thing on the top of David's wish list, his one thing, and say, if that one thing, if we want that one thing to be our one thing, what does it look like to get there? But this morning, I just want us to specifically look at why is that one thing so special, and what is it? What does it mean to desire that one greatest thing? Let's begin, though, before we get to God's Word, with a word of prayer. Father, this morning, we want you to be the thing we want above all else. Lord, for those of us who claim to follow Jesus, we know that that's what you've called us to. We know that you've called us to a life intent upon you. Lord, not because it somehow feeds your ego or that you need us, but because you designed us that way. You designed us to be in continual relationship with you. So, Father, help us to change our hearts this season, Lord, as we're consumed with busyness and things and all the other stuff going on. God, may our hearts this month become more in tune with yours, that our desire may be more shaped into a desire after you. And Father, this morning, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight. Amen. So the greatest wish list here that David has. Now, there was, in the time of the first Advent, after Jesus had been born, there was another individual that's recorded in Scripture who literally lived out what David was asking for. Joseph and Mary brought Jesus, the infant Jesus, to the temple to be dedicated to the Lord according to the laws and the customs. And before they left, they have this encounter. Look up here at Luke 2, 36 through 38. It says, "And there was a prophetess, Anna, the daughter of Phanuel, of the tribe of Asher. She was advanced in years, having lived with her husband 7 years from when she was a virgin, and then as a widow until she was 84. She did not depart from the temple, worshiping with fasting and prayer night and day. And coming up at that very hour, she began to give thanks to God and speak of him to all who were waiting for the redemption of Jerusalem." Look at this life. Just stop and think about Anna for a moment here. Well, what was it David asked for? To dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. "For she did not depart from the temple, worshiping with fasting and prayer night and day." So if this sermon goes 5 minutes long, you know, I don't want to hear any complaints, because Anna was there night and day. So as long as the sun's still up, you've got no... Oh, just... Anna found something worth staying for. Anna found something worth staying for when she allowed God's presence to be her greatest love. You know, from the days of Moses to Solomon, the presence of God traveled in the tabernacle. Every time they would reset up this tent that was like a mobile church, the presence of God would come and dwell over the Ark of the Covenant that Caleb mentioned earlier. The presence of God would be right there. And then after Solomon and a temple was built, there was a permanent place where the where the presence of God would be manifest. So for those who wanted to get close to the presence of God, you went to a place. You went to that spot, and Anna went and did that. This is what David, for David, it would have been the tabernacle. It was, I want to go be where God is. David's request and Anna's way of life was to be as close as possible to God's presence. So the question is then, why is the presence of God so important? Why is presence? First of all, let's just talk about why is presence important. Let's go back, a couple weeks ago we talked about Job's friends and all they did wrong. What was the one thing they did right? They were there. They showed up and they spent 7 days just being with Job. There's something powerful about presence. It's the reason why a couple days ago you got together with family. And though I'm sure there was at least a few little squabbles and disappointments and troubles and all that here and there, if you had your family with you, you were probably pretty glad you did. And if you didn't, you wished you had. Because presence matters. Presence matters an awful lot. I don't think I'd be reaching too far to guess that each of us has moments, probably even this week, when we felt alone and needed someone's presence and wished we had more of someone's presence. We were built to have relationships with other people. In Genesis, God says it's not good for man to be alone. It's the one first thing he said, here's a problem. We need one another, but more than that, we were designed to be in the presence of God. The Garden of Eden was designed so that we could walk and talk and exist in this close companionship with God. And the entire story of the rest of the Old Testament is God trying his best to get close to us again. Ultimately culminating in this, what we celebrate in this season, of just coming and living here himself. Being God's presence on earth, Emmanuel, God with us. We were created in his image. We were made to know that we could rest in him. So the question, the problem then is why do we continue to live like God isn't our greatest desire? Why do we live, if that's what we need the most is this presence, why don't we live that way? And really what it comes down to is sin. It comes down to this brokenness that started in Eden and leads up to what Cramner referenced there is the fact that each of us is born with a heart prone to love itself more than God. See, and the problem is anytime we spend time in someone else's presence, there's friction. Where there's differences between us, there's friction, right? Again, something you might have had some experience with over Thanksgiving. We have friction with people. Our differences in the ways we look at things and priorities and, I wanted to do this and you wanted to do this. Because our love for ourselves is so strong, if we get too close to God, there's a lot of friction. Because our desires don't line up with his. Our hearts don't line up with his. And the more you're going to spend time with God, the more he is going to change you just by being there. Just by being next to God, you will begin to feel that change. And the truth is, we don't like to. I like to stay the way I am. I don't want to change. I don't want to have my priorities realigned. I don't want those things to happen. And so if I just keep God at a little bit of a distance, then I can keep doing things the way I like doing them. I can keep making myself the priority instead of embracing him, where when I let God in, things start to change. And like we saw in Job's encounter just last week, God has a much higher perspective, higher power, and if we spend enough time with him, we know he's right. That's the biggest problem. When we come up against God and there's a difference of opinion, if we trust God's word, then we know he's right, which means it's not God that's going to change. It's me. Being changed by the presence of God is not the only reason to make this our one thing. It's not the only reason to put it at the top of our wish list, but it's certainly up there. I'm going to look at the next part of this, Psalm 27:4, verse. If we go back here, presence of God, that was the first bullet. Psalm 27:4 again. The one thing I asked of the Lord that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord. To gaze upon the beauty of the Lord is the second point here. So I've got a confession to make here. I think my wife is beautiful. It's true. I do. I've always thought so. But when I look at old pictures, not too old because, you know, she's only 29. But I'm shocked at how much that beauty has grown over time. I'm always surprised by it. I don't know why, but there's more that draws me toward her today than there was yesterday. Beauty does that. Beauty does that. When we look at something that is real beauty, it draws us in. We see it more deeply, and it connects us more closely. I shared last week that our family was going to go down to the Southern Oregon coast. It's funny, I was able to write this before I went, knowing it would happen, and it just worked out that I didn't have to change my script at all, because I knew that this was the way this was going to play out. We went down there to stay at a cabin in Bandon, and then we went to Shore Acres on Friday, which is a state park that has this huge garden that they fill with Christmas lights every year. It's absolutely stunning, and it's something we used to do all the time when Monica's family was still kind of lived in that area. But since they moved over to Bend, we hadn't been down there to see the Christmas lights ever with our kids. We thought, you know, now that we've got a senior, we kind of thought, well, this is the last time we can force her to do something. So we should really make this a priority. And so we went down there, and, you know, it was neat, you know, seeing the lights from a distance. You know, when you're first walking up, you can see into the garden a little bit. And when you see those first ones, it pulls you in. You just want to see what's next. I mean, there's so many. I mean, there's a giant koi pond in there, and they actually had big lit koi in the pond, you know, under there. They had frogs that were riveting, and they had, you know, animated humpback whales jumping out of the water and splashing back down in, and all of these different things going on, not to mention free cookies and cider, so that was kind of cool. Every step leading us in took us into this wonderland of light and smiling faces. You're watching kids run around there. This is a picture of one part of that space. That barely does it justice, but you can see, I mean, there's walkways all through there. Absolutely stunning. You know, when we finally left, it was with this sense, at least I left with a little sense of, man, I don't know if I'm going to get to see that again. Like, when is the next time I'm going to be able to make this trip and be able to carve out the right time and everything? And, you know, who knows? I don't know that there's going to be another chance. At the very least, it'll be another year. I mean, there's no way we can do it before then. But, boy, I would love to go see it again. But what was agreed on by everybody with us, though, is that though the lights were spectacular. See, we got to the park around 3:45-ish while the sun was still up, and so went out onto the cliffs we were talking about and watched the sunset there. I had about, I don't know, 200 or 300 pictures I took, because you can just keep doing this with your phone. And I had to pick one. That was by far better. It's amazing how God, and so before I even took the pictures, I knew where this would go. Because God is a much better artist than we are, even with electricity. But man, when we stop, I could have easily walked up, gone pretty sunset, taken a picture, and walked away. But there's something that drew me deeper into the presence of the Lord, just standing and looking. And can I tell you that though nature is filled, if you go spend some time outside, stand by a waterfall, go to Multnomah Falls, go up to Mount St. Helens, go anywhere and just stand and look and just rest in there, and you'll see the beauty of God start to rise up out of that. But I'll tell you what, nature is only the smallest part of God's real beauty. It's only the smallest part, but somehow, and I've told the story before, this where I'm standing there is about the place where I finally told God 20-some years ago that I would do what he was asking me to do and go into ministry. This is why this is such a special place for me to go back to. That moment of knowing that God was calling, leading, knowing that God was present, was by far more beautiful than the most beautiful thing out there. But the thing is unless we stop and consider the beauty of the Lord, we won't see it. That's the thing. I mean, there's beauty all around us. There's beauty in each person that we meet. But if we don't take the time to look for it, we're never going to see it. But as soon as you start to see it, you'll see more. And you'll see God begin to pop out in the smallest places. And you begin to see his beauty each place, but you actually do have to stop. You have to stop and experience it. Beauty isn't something that's a logical conclusion. I don't know anybody who would have walked up there and said, well, let's see, we're looking at this particular palette of sunset today, and look, the rocks are shaped like this. And, well, because the rocks have this particular geometric structure, or in this particular balance with the sky and the sea, this is beauty. I hope nobody does. I won't ask for hands raised. Maybe there are some people that are like, oh, I love the logic. I had a math teacher who did see God in the mathematics. It was at a Christian college, but he got excited about math like nobody else. It was the weirdest thing to me. I have not learned that particular skill set yet. But this is one of the reasons why, I encourage you at least every few years to read the Bible cover to cover. Because in each and every story throughout and in the way they're laid out and placed together, God's beauty just rises up and you find it to be more and more and more present, and it draws you deeper and deeper in to just love with God. And it builds that desire. It feeds that desire for God to be that one thing. I heard Matt Chandler, a pastor in Texas, said it this way one time. He says, for the unbeliever, he eats his filet, he drinks his cab, he enjoys all of those kinds of things. But for the believer, you can eat that steak or, drink that cab or have a messy potatoes, which is our family dish. He didn't mention that. That's our like family holiday potato dish, messy potatoes. Hmm. And we as believers will say, man, God is amazing. And it rolls past the steak. See, our praise doesn't stop at the thing itself. I didn't see that and go, wow, that's just a beautiful sunset. I went from that's a beautiful sunset to that's an amazing God. See that? My enjoyment of that sunset went far beyond what anyone who doesn't know Christ could have, because it didn't just stop at the thing. It rolled up to the Creator. And the enjoyment deepens. The unbeliever can't do that. They're never going to cut into a nice steak and say, man, is God good? They're just going to say, hey, I love steak. Can I afford it? Cool. Done. The believer enjoys the gifts of God in a whole different way than the non-believer, because we're acknowledging where it came from. It rolls past. I love the way he concludes his statement. He says, worship is wrung out in the heart of a believer in a meal or in a sunset or in anywhere else where God's beauty is demonstrated. And that's why worship is so precious. It's why I love the time when we come together and sing. Not just because it gives God the honor that he deserves, but really it's for our sake as well. Because it causes us to pause and reflect on what makes him worthy. I love when we say, is he worthy? Is he worthy? Yes, he is. Yes, he is, and he's beautiful. Here's a few examples from the Old Testament of looking at God's beauty. Psalm 73:25, who have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you. 1 Chronicles 16:29, ascribe to the Lord the glory, do his name, bring an offering and come before him. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. I love that phrase, splendor of his holiness. I don't think we, usually when we use the word holy, we're just talking about good behavior. It's not even close to touching what it really means. There's this splendor. Isaiah 33:17, your eyes will behold the king in his beauty. They will see a land that stretches afar. With the presence of God comes the beauty of God. And the more we see, the more we'll see. So the next part of here, just this last part, one thing have I asked of the Lord that I will seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. To inquire in his temple. The last piece here is that we would know and be changed by his mind and heart. That David wanted to not just go visit and not just appreciate God. He wanted to inquire. And the word inquire there, this is one that gets translated differently in every translation I looked at. Meditate, consider. I kind of looked up what's the full definition of that. And the picture I got was it's to process information with a focus on the implications of a course and an appropriate response. So that rolls off the tongue. It's to take in the information, to consider what it means and what my response to what it means should be. It's a full package here. It's not just to ask a question. It's to go and go, I want to understand at the deepest level, not just so that way I can understand, but so that way I can respond. That way I can change who I am to line up with that. David wants to take in everything God has to offer and give it time to do its work to transform him. He doesn't just want facts about God. He doesn't want just a warm, fuzzy experience with God. He wants to invest his life in the beauty of God's person and presence in such a way that it changes him from the inside out. If you want a relationship with God, understand that this is always where it will lead. If you want to draw close to God, I mean, consider even when Jesus called his first disciples, come follow me and I will make you fishers of men. If you come spend time with me, I will change you. I will change you. Consider Romans 12, 1 and 2. It says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. He's talking about worship. And then what does he go into? He says, do not be conformed. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and purpose. What Paul's talking about here is allow God to change you from the inside out by the power of his presence, through his word, through getting in and appreciating what God has done and who God is in this. This is one of the reasons that the religious and the self-righteous of Jesus' day and of ours really struggle with Jesus. When we're not dissatisfied with where we are not going to be motivated to change. It's why most of the time we have to hit a bottom before God can get a hold of someone. And that goes for those of us in the church as much as it does for those outside. We'll go, now I'm good the way I am. And so now that I've gotten to where I'm pretty satisfied, I can give myself a little distance from God and no longer be forced to change. But the best life, the greatest gift that Anna found and David found is that stepping fully into God's presence to allow him to lead, to allow him to change us from the inside out. Just read this one more time. One thing I have asked of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. That our wish list might look like this. That is, we were to say, all I want for Christmas is the presence of God. Maybe I need to work on the lyrics a little bit and how that all comes together. But if that can be the thing we want above all else, if that can be the thing that drives us and draws us, the life you will live, Christian. The life you will live in that. It won't be all peaches and cream because all that friction is going to keep happening and God's going to keep changing you. But oh, what a beautiful life. A life that caused Anna. Let's just stop and go back to Anna for a minute. So she lived with her husband 7 years after they got married. Custom around that time, she would have been married at least by the time she was 20. So let's say he passed away when she was 27 and she's now 84. So we're talking about a woman who has dwelt in and around the temple for 60 years. just loving the presence of God. And she didn't get tired of it. I think that's maybe the thing we worry about sometimes is, well, at what point in time will I get bored of God? You won't. There's no day when you're going to run out of new things, new depths to go in your relationship with Jesus. The good news, the gospel, is that God has responded to this desire. This need that we have built into us to connect with God, that's what Christmas is about. That's what we're celebrating in this season, is that, you know, in the same way I desperately wanted my Transformer race set, and my parents responded to that desire, we need the presence of God in our lives. And God has responded to that desire. But in the same way that I couldn't get it my way, we'll find as we kind of look in the coming weeks, we're going to look at other passages that use that phrase, one thing. There's five of them in all of Scripture. If you want to cheat and look ahead, just do a search for one thing, and you'll see there's five of them in the Bible. One in the Old Testament, this one, and then four more in the New Testament. And each one of them reflects back on the presence of God and this ultimate desire we have. But the thing is we have to be willing to take it God's way. We have to be willing to take it God's way. Today, as we do the first Sunday of each month, we come to the table. In the Old Testament, in the temple, there would have been a thing called the table of presence. And it was a place where there would be bread and there would be a cup. But they also would celebrate it at Passover time, the full Passover meal, to remember the time when God's presence was very strongly felt in Israelite history during the Exodus. Jesus took that meal and used it to tell a different story about presence. In this picture is the great gift. It was the presence, it was what God did during the Exodus, but Jesus reframes it and says, this is what I'm doing for you now, because I'm inviting you in to my presence. He says, this bread is my body, which is going to be given for you. This cup is my blood, which is going to be poured out for you. So that way my presence can be with you. And though, you know, as an evangelical church, we don't hold that the literal body and blood are here, but they're reminders to us. They're reminders that we live in God's presence. As followers of Jesus, God's presence has come to be with us right here. I don't have to go to a temple. God's presence is only as far away as I am. It's interesting, in the same way, there was another ceremony that the Jews did that involved a bread and a cup. And Jesus took elements of that when he had this Last Supper. It was also the way that a hopeful young man would express his desire to be married to a young woman. He would sit down in the presence of their families with a bread and with a cup and offer them, say, This is for you. This is for you. And would use some of the same words that Jesus would use with his disciples in that way to invite that young woman in to become a part of his family, to come into his home in the same way that Jesus has invited us into his, that Jesus has extended this to us. I'm going to have the worship team go ahead and come on up. We do open communion here, which means that if you believe in Jesus, you believe that he died and rose again, then you are welcome to the table. If there are kids, parents, that is up to you whether or not they're ready to participate in this meal or not. But as we come, what I encourage you to do is form two lines and take, and then go back to your seats, and then we'll partake together, and then once the worship team is done, I'll come back up and lead us in the remainder of the meal.